on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there, welcome aboard. The fishing's really hotting up. Some excellent catches coming in from around the state, west of the Divide and up and down the coast. And a big show lined up this morning. Craig McGill out on Sydney Harbour will check in on Stinker too to see how his vow of abstinence, his abstinence pledge when it comes to bait is going. See if he's sticking to it. Trenno will reveal his ultra-secret bass lure. A bit of a Frankenstein concoction with skirts and jig heads and bristles and soft plastic tails. It's got a pretty good action. And First Cast, everything you need to know when it comes to catching silver trevally with Alex Bellissimo. It's all coming up on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish and Northern Beaches Rock Estuary and Beach Guide, Alex Bellissimo. There's some good news. The pocket rockets, those beautiful little sports fish, the silver trevally, are on in good numbers in the harbour and people are bagging out. They're terrific sport. G'day, Alex.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Yeah, what a great little fish they are, too. Aren't they underrated eating fish, too? The people from Asia, particularly Japanese people, really revere them as a very fine sashimi fish, the old blurter, don't they?
Absolutely, mate. Look, some of the most famous chefs around the world actually mentioned that one of the most underrated fish, the sashimi, is a silver trevally. But the thing is, in my opinion, if you get a silver trevally that's up to about a kilo, you'll find that the flesh doesn't get a little bit dry. It's quite typical with a lot of species. They can be either too small, which makes them too mushy, or they get too big, right, too old, basically, and their flesh quality isn't quite as good. And with trevally, right, you find that up to about that kilo mark for sashimi, just superb. They're one of my very favourite sashimi fish.
And the good news is that's about the size of the run at the moment.
It is about the size of the run. It's between about 900 grams up to about 1.2 kilo. So they're a good run of fish, great fun fish, and they'll test you as well, especially if you're standing off the rocks in the harbour. Because a lot of the spots that I'm taking my clients is actually on standing on some of the safe rock locations, and there's no waves because it's in the harbour, in North Harbour and Middle Harbour. And they're out right throughout Sydney Harbour as well, and off the jetties as well. And, you know, you're catching them on 3 to 5 kilo line class, and very, very good fun. Look, you could fish a lot lighter for them, but because you've got a lot of structure around you, I recommend not to go too much lighter.
Well, I often catch them. I use a very light line for my estuary whiting fishing and often catch them on the live nippers. And boy, are you in for a tussle on 4-pound line. I mean, it's just, you cannot bullock them. You've got to wait and wait and fight and fight, and they go round and round, and they use every ounce of their side. Being a flat fish, they go on their side and they, you know, you've got them on straight away. They do that circling thing that all the trevallies do, you know, that tight circles and great
and
fish.
That pulsating that they do as well.
Absolutely. And then those scorching little runs, drag peeling runs, zzz, off they go. They're terrific.
And they
little
look good. Exactly right. They're terrific fish. And as they're coming up, you go, so for the start, you know, you've got a good fish on, a good quality fish. And two, when you see them coming up, you go, oh, wow. Excellent, a nice blurter, which is the actual nickname. And you know why they call them blurters as well?
Because they talk.
They literally do. They got that blurt, 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 that grunting. And what it is it's the gill plates that are grinding. So when they're feeding in the sand, picking up invertebrates and little crustaceans and so forth, because they're a soft mouth fish, they can't crush their food, and then using their gills to grind, and that's that grinding, that blurting sound, and that's the reason why they got called blurters. It's very, very rare for people to call them. It's people more of our vintage to call them blurters.
That's right. It's a good old Aussie nickname.
Sorry, but you're probably a bit younger than me.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's what the old Aussie fishermen call them. But I love the fact that they're so easy to clean. You get your filleting knife and they're flat, you can take every bit of flesh off right to the rib cage, right to the backbone, right to the bones, and they're really boneless. They're so easy to prepare. You can knock the fillets off in a matter of seconds. And I also find when I'm fishing the run on the sand flats, which is my favourite type of fishing for the wary whiting and the big brim and the odd flathead, I'll have a size 2 ball sinker and cast out across the current. But if they're around, I'll put on a size 1 ball sinker. So that baits up a bit, that nipper or the yabby is up a bit in the water column, and that makes all the difference.
A slower sink rate, yeah.
Exactly right. And you'll catch all of the fish on that one with the lighter lead that's getting up off the bottom a bit more. It's funny, they're more inclined to take stuff in the middle of the water column, and they respond really well to burley too, don't they, Alex?
They respond really well to burley. As you mentioned, they're quite often caught in the mid depth range. Although you get lots of them on the bottom as well, because they do feed around the sand. You'll see the grit in their stomach as well, and they're, I know it's funny to call them aggressive, but they can be aggressive because they swim around quite fast. And when they come in big schools, you'll find it can put the brim off the bite. So there might be brim in the area, and you'll often see the brim coming, and they'll come in right in close. And you'll see like silver flashes down below, and you go, oh, okay, the brim have actually come right in close. But obviously when they're in smaller numbers, the brim, I call them social fish, right, basically, where the brim, the ludric, this is off the rocks as well, the ludric and the trevally will feed in harmony with each other, but you won't get a king feeding in amongst them. Like a decent size 6 or 8 kilo king can put off the smaller trevally. They don't like that because they can be put off by the fact that there's a big fish, which may be a predator to them, see, so. But look, they're relatively easy to catch. The hooks can pull. Being part of the trevally family, like, you know, they got a mouth similar to like a yellowtail, where they can elongate, and they got that soft skin on the mouth. And if you bully them too much, the hook can also pull as well. For anyone that doesn't understand the hook pulling, meaning that the hook can tear out of the fish's mouth, and it can tear a hole in their mouth, and therefore the hook can sometimes pull out. So when you hook a trevally, don't try and bully them far too much. Enjoy the fun. Just enjoy the moment. Let them run around. They'll tire, and then when they come up, you can either net them or you can wash them up, and you'll pull less hooks as well.
I tell you what, if you get a big one, good luck. You'll be on it for a long time. What's the biggest you've caught around Sydney?
Oh, look, a little bit over 4 kilos, but the thing is, I think it was about 4.2 kilos. It was about 9 pound. 4.6 kilos is a 10 pounder. And every year I get them up to about 2.6, 2.8. If I go and put in a concerted effort and go and fish very late at night, you'll find that those big trevally can be available around September. And you'll get that run of between 2 and 3.5 kilo fish. And then some years you'll get them up to that 3.8. And then I had that one rare fish that was well over 4 kilos.
And the interesting
that I mentioned.
Not rare off Lord Howe Island, having fished there for kingfish.
I believe so.
You'll catch 10-pound silver trevally all the time. They're monsters over there. For some reason, they're just monsters over there. But that's a big fish, 4.2 kilos.
Oh, I mean, they look impressive. And they get like a hump head on them too. Their head shape even changes. It gets like a bit of a scoop in front of it.
And that'll fight as hard as any GT. That'll fight as hard as any golden trevally. They are
golden,
really...
or even, a king. Yeah, I mean, they pull friggin' hard, and they strip line off you. When they get to around that 3.5 kilo range on 10 or 12-pound line, they can strip off 60 or 80 metres, no problems. They just run and run and run. And the nature of those species as well is they can try and cut you off as well. See, so.
Yeah, they'll work down deep, and they'll just dog it out down deep, try to get you into the structure. They're terrific fish. It's the Big Fish with Alex Bellissimo on the Silver Trevally of Sydney Harbour. They seem to be, they'll get right through the estuary, but they seem to be more towards the entrance to the estuaries. I remember we had a fly fishing trip once to Tugra Lakes, and one of the boys were fishing for estuary perch. One of the lads hooked a 50-centimetre job on a 5-weight fly rod. He was towed around the entrance for about an hour, but they tend to like that cleaner water up the front of the estuary, don't they?
They do generally, but in those dry years, you'll get them up. So for anyone that knows the Sydney area, you'll get them past Balmain and up to the Glazeville Bridge. They'll go right upstream, providing there's been less rain. But you're dead right there. Generally, sort of from the heads, if you're going to fish the estuary, that is, from the heads up to sort of around just past the bridge, can be the best places to go and fish for silver trevally. And look, they're a readily available species right throughout winter and also during the spring period, which is now, and even in early summer. And then when the water starts heating up in that early summer period, you'll find that the actual the volume will actually decrease as well.
Well, take us through your gear and your techniques and your burleying. And it's just very accessible fishing. Any kid, any girl or boy on their bike can go along the bike track at Manly or somewhere and find a little headland, little spot, and into beautiful, clear, deep water in Sydney Harbour and have a crack, can't they?
Absolutely. And you know something, you get them on lures, they respond quite well to lures as well. But let's start off with the bait side of it. So the gear that I recommend when you're land-based fishing, so you can fish with a 5 or 6 foot rod, but the problem is if you're standing off the rocks, you'll find that the line will start cutting along the edge, because if you're standing back safely on the rocks, you're standing back, say, let's say a metre. Now, when the rod's bent over, the rod's only about 4 foot long then if it's a 5 foot rod. Therefore, the line can start scraping on the edge and you can end up unnecessarily losing fish. So therefore, if you're using a rod around that eight foot length, you'll find that your line is a bit more clearer of the edge and you're less likely to get cut off. Now, obviously, there's techniques of avoiding getting cut off, but just to simplify things, preferably stick to a rod that's around 8 foot long with a sensitive tip, and a rod that's suitable between, say, 4 and 6 kilo braid or mono. A reel to suit. A 1-0 hook is a good average size. You can go down to a number 1 or you can even go up to a 2-0, but a 1-0 is a good average size. Half pilchard baits work really well, and complement it with a pilchard burley, like chop up the pilchards itself, right, with scissors or with a knife, and mix it with mushy bread, and that way you got more fill. I call it fill, basically the bread, and which means that you're not going through lots and lots of pilchards, because pilchards bait, to use bait for burley is quite expensive. So you throw in half a dozen pillies, which you've chopped up, you've got some mushy bread, which is, say, a couple of loaves of bread would be enough, and that gives you enough fill, enough weight to be able to keep throwing out. So you've got enough volume of burley where you can consistently throw out. You can use a little like a, you know those dog scoops that they use for
throwing balls? You see them down in the dog park and the retrievers chasing them. And what about lead? Just a very light pea sinker on a running rig, or would you have a swivel down to your 1-0 hook?
Well, that's right. A very light ball sinker ranging from, say, 00 ball, even unweighted. And you use that dog scoop to throw out your burley. Saves you sticking your hands in the bucket all the time. Alternatively, you can throw put your hand in the bucket and throw out burley. Then you wash your hands down, because you don't want a slippery rod, right? Because if you got burley in your hands, you can end up potentially even half losing your rod. It could slip out of your hands because of the consistent burling. But the other alternative too is to use a peeled prawn. So like a peeled Hawkesbury prawn or a Hunter River prawn, or one of those river prawns work very well. You can also use a firmer prawn, like a king prawn or an endeavour or a banana prawn, and you can break those prawns. Yeah, if you pick up those prawns, okay, there's probably about 25 or 30 to the kilo, which means they're a pretty big prawn. The prawns that you pick up from the bait shops are about, say, a 60 to 80 count to even a half a kilo or a kilo bag, which means they're a lot smaller, and they fit on a 1-0 hook really well. But if you're using those bigger prawns, you're better off using them actually breaking them in half or into thirds and use even a third or a half a prawn, that's more than enough. Mash the bait to the size hook you're using, and you cast out where you've thrown the burley as well. Now, it's easy to forget to stop burling because you're so preoccupied with what you're doing. Putting on a bait, tying a hook on, shooting the breeze, talking to your mates,
yeah.
And you forget to burley up, which means that the burley trail gets cut off. And because these fish respond so well to burley, they also become disinterested very quickly as well. So if you stop the burley trail for far too long, what you'll find, they become disinterested, and you're catching fish, and all of a sudden you're not catching fish a few minutes later, and you're scratching your head and going, oh, wow, they're gone. And the main reason could be is because you've cut the burley trail off.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's important to keep them going.
And it's good to burley in those spots like Sydney Harbour. Botany Bay is another great spot for them. Molyneux Point there is renowned. They call it Trevally Alley, actually, and there's plenty of them there at the moment. But to try them ceviche, they're really nice when you just cook them in the citrus acid with a fresh salad. Beautiful. Lovely with some pickled ginger and soy and a little bit of wasabi.
Oh, I'm salivating, mate.
They're just a gorgeous sashimi. A really nice smoke. They're not the greatest, if you're done conventionally, but as a cured fish or a raw fish or a ceviche, they are as good as any fish you'll ever eat. So check them out. The Trevally are on in big numbers at the moment, and that's a good thing about you, Alex. I know you take a lot of people out, and if they're smart, they'll say, everyone wants to catch giant trophy kingfish or whatever, but the first thing you should say to Alex is, what's biting, mate? What's on the go? And if he says, well, let's go and catch some silver Trevally, they're on, and you'll guarantee yourself to catch a fish. They school up at this time of year. They're in good numbers in beautiful Sydney Harbour, and you don't even have to get seasick and go out in the boat. You can just walk along the shore there, can't you, mate?
Exactly right. Look, a lot of my regulars just say to me, rather than go out and target a species, a lot of my clients like to target a specific species, which is great because that's what they want. It's part of their bucket list, and I'm not trying to deny you that or even deter you. But being practical, it's about what's really on at the time. And if the snapper are biting or the whiting are off the beach, the trevally are biting, what you mentioned earlier on, you're pursuing, you're targeting what's actually really on, and you'll find that your results, your percentage ratio of catching fish on the day on like several outings is much higher compared to targeting a species that may not be on. In fact, it could even put you off that species if you have consecutive outings of not doing so well. And look, at the end of the day, we all want to catch fish, don't we?
That's exactly what it's all about. People say it's fishing, not catching, but I think some of our regulars would beg to differ. It's catching is what it's about.
I don't mind catching, mate.
Yeah, neither do I. Alex, it's great to know that the blurters, the silver trevally, are on. Give them a go in Sydney Harbour. Very accessible. It doesn't matter if you're on a bicycle to get there, in a wheelchair. You can park somewhere and toss a prawn in or a piece of pilchard, burley them up, and get a feed. Tight lines, buddy.
Yeah, tight lines, and thanks very much. You have a great one.
Good to talk to you again. Alex Bellissimo, the beach rock and estuary guru on the northern side of Sydney.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Went fishing last Sunday and I caught a smelt. Put him in the pan and the fire he felt. Of all the smells I ever smelt.
Well,
I never smelt a smelt like that smelt.
As the salmon swam up the river to spawn,
yeah,
he said to himself with a great big yawn,
oh-ho,
the next time I come up this way,
I'm gonna make the trip in a Chevrolet. Oh-ho.
It's the Big Fish, and Craig McGill's on Sydney Harbour. What are you catching, Craig?
Morning, mate. Look, it's been all right out here lately. A lot of surface fish, a few kingies about, some very good squid fishing. It's all happening.
Gee, it's good to hear that the squid are back in numbers. It's been a little bit of a lean trot for the squid, hasn't it?
Yeah, remember we talked about that with Stinker, and I predicted once we started getting a bit of dry weather and a bit of clear water out here, they'd come back. And that's pretty much what's happened, both the calamari and the arrow squid. So this time of year, we sort of get a mix of both. But the calamari have been exceptionally good this season. And strangely, too, normally this time of year, we only get the smaller ones. So I think they have a bit of a spawning in October and we get a lot of small ones around now. But this year, it's been a mix of all sizes, lots of small ones and lots of huge ones as well. And cuttlefish, plenty of little morning cuttlefish out there. So getting the baits, no problem at all. Kingies have been a little bit on and off, but that tends to happen at this time of year until the water temp settles down. All up, looking pretty good.
You know, a lot of our listeners would believe that the bait is much better than the target species to eat.
Absolutely. I've said a few times I'd swap my kingie for a squid any day.
Hey, one thing that many of our listeners are noticing too is the number of maritime boats in Lake Macquarie on the Hawkesbury, Brisbane Water on Sydney Harbour. It's good to see them out and about.
Yeah. Look, they've always had a very good presence on the harbour here. In fact, you know, I'd say that I almost see them pretty much on a daily basis now, which is a great thing. Something's been concerning me a little bit lately, though. When I first started out here, and I've been doing this for 34 years now, they always used to fly the state flag or the Australian flag. And then I noticed they started flying the Indigenous flag and also the Pride flag around, around Mardi Gras time, which is great. I think that sort of thing to, you know, see diversity and encouraging diversity and that sort of thing is great. But just lately I've noticed that they've dropped the Australian flag. So they're flying the Aboriginal flag, but they've dropped the Australian flag, which I'm not quite sure, if that's the right thing to be honest.
So you'd be happy if they had the Australian flag and the Indigenous flag together, or the Pride flag, as they often fly on the bridge?
Absolutely, which is what they've always done. And I think, including identity groups is a great thing.
Another thing that they could do is put fisheries officers on board. You see so many more maritime boats than fisheries regularly, and I don't know if they're mates. They should be. If you thought that every maritime boat had the possibility of a fisheries person on board, I think that more people would comply and look after our resources and make fishing more sustainable, because when that big shark cat comes around the corner and you think they're going to check my bag, then that would be a good thing. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I'll tell you something funny. So their presence on the water has a huge impact, right? The word gets around. Everybody calls each other on the phone, on the radios. Fisheries is out today. So it's definitely a presence thing. It's like police on the road, you know. They've only got to park on the side of the road and people behave themselves. One time the fisheries boat was broke down at the spit and they tied it up at the jetty. And it was there for about 2 weeks, just kept waiting to get towed or repaired or whatever they were doing. But the word got out every day that fisheries was out, you know what I mean? And it was this whole thing going on around the fishing community. Oh, fisheries are doing a blitz this week and all the rest of it. They weren't. Their boat was just broken down and tied up.
All right. But I'm sure you would see more maritime boats virtually every day.
And
when I'm fishing on Lake Macquarie or Brisbane Water or Tuggerah Lakes, everywhere, or Sydney Harbour, I see those maritime boats every time I go fishing, but I don't see the fisheries boats. And I'd love to see more fisheries boats, but maybe they could team up.
I've often wondered why they don't just put a fisheries inspector on the maritime boat and just, if nothing else, just to have that presence there, you know, because that really does make a big difference, I think.
Yeah, it's good to see those custodians of our waterways out and about. Craig, tight lines, mate. I'll let you get back into it. And anything in the bag today?
Yep, doing well so far, mate. Yeah, doing pretty good. Got a few kingies, some salmon, squid. Yeah, it's been good.
Ah, lovely. Oh, well, good luck cleaning them.
All right, thanks, mate.
Tight lines.
Talk soon. See ya.
Craig McGill there on Sydney Harbour.
You get line and I get pole, honey. You get a line and I get a pole today. You get a line and I get a pole. Meet you down at that crawdad hole, honey. You know I mean right. Whoa, honey. You know I mean right.
I'll catch you on the big fish, baby.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Coming up, Stinker's taken the pledge to give up the bait. But what would we call him if he's no longer Stinky? We'll catch up with the man himself to find out how his bait abstinence is going on The Big Fish.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find him? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, g'day, Scott.
Now, what was the headline last week on the podcast? Stinker to give up the bait. Now, that was clickbait. How long did you last on the pledge?
Well, I was sort of, for a very short time, I don't know what overcame me, but I thought, I'm going to give bait a miss and I'm going to go to the easy side, the dark side, and use just toss plastics over the side of the boat. Well, that lasted about 2 days.
And then
I said, what am I thinking? What am I thinking? Yeah. You know, I'm a bait fisherman, and that's what I've always been, and that's what I'll always be. So everything I said about plastics, forget it, because I'm not going there.
And what made you turn back? What made you come back to the light?
Well, it's an interesting thing in fishing. If it works, keep doing it. Now, that's a very old thing. Well, my father taught me lots about these old sayings. And if it keeps working, keep doing it. And I'm thinking, well, why am I changing a method that I know is successful? And I enjoy it. So why change? And it's interesting, really, because this past week, and we've been dominated by northeasterly winds recently, and the weather's been magnificent here in Port Stephens. And when the weather is good in Port Stephens, there is no more beautiful place I've ever seen. You look in the travel brochures of places all over the world, and I'm thinking, I can do better than that from looking from my lounge room. And just up amongst all the, over the beaches and looking at all the islands here, there's nothing I have ever seen. You can toss in the Whitsundays and North Queensland, whatever, you can toss in whatever you like. The Mediterranean, you know, if you catch a fish in the Mediterranean, it'd be very lonely, I reckon. But
it is a beautiful, you know, beautiful, beautiful place, isn't it, with the towering sentinels at the mouth to that crystal Azure Blue Harbour, the Tomaree and Bundelbar, you know, it's got everything. You're right. It is a magnificent place. And it's probably the biggest estuary system we've got, isn't it? I mean, Eden's pretty spectacular, but I don't think we've got a harbour, a natural harbour like that outside of Sydney, have we, really? And it's probably bigger than Sydney.
Oh, it's a lot bigger than Sydney. And then you add on the Myall Lake system, and it's a massive waterway. And to think that I was appointed here to teach school, I mean, it's better than win a lotto because it's a life experience, really. And I'm not over it yet. On days like today, I get up and see the sunrise and I think, oh, I've never ever seen anything more beautiful than this. Anyway, I'm sort of going back to my old roots with a nor'easterly wind. And if I want to catch big snapper, when I'm talking big snapper, I'm talking 4 to 6 kilo snapper. You'll get them bigger, you'll get them smaller, but any snapper between 4 and 6 kilo, in my opinion, is a big snapper. Actually, any fish over 3.5 or 3 kilo is a jolly good snapper too. But and I know where I can catch them. I know exactly where I can catch them. But I've got to have the right conditions. And the right conditions aren't always available. And then we've run out of fish. And so my family, who just love seafood, they say, look, you know, the cupboard's bare. Get yourself moving. Well, if I need to catch fish, and they're all visited, the family were here last week, I needed to catch fish. So where do I go that I can always rely on? The apple tree. Oh, and it's called the apple tree because it's simply a case of going and picking as many as you want. And it's 100% in a northeasterly wind. I can't remember ever going there and coming home empty-handed. I can't remember.
And collecting the bait. I mean, you buy stuff at the tackle shop, and sure, they look great, the lures and the soft plastics and things, but there's a game within a game getting your live slimies or yellowtail too for fishing with bait, isn't there? I mean, that's a bit of fun in itself, really.
Well, it is. I mean, I went to the apple tree mainly because I'm going to Broughton Island in a couple of weeks, and I like to have a good stack of bait before I go up there. Now, the best bait I have found on Broughton Island is three different baits that I use is either slimy mackerel, either a block or a fillet. Slimy mackerel fresh is the best. I reckon that's number one. Number two is a block or a fillet of yellowtail. And number three is a big king prawn. Now, if you put that on a 6-0 hook or a 7-0 hook and you toss that close to a wash, a big wash in a southerly, well, you're going to hook a big fish. And that happens all the time. But because the nor'easterly is blowing, the sea is flattened and conditions are different. So I'll go and anchor at the apple tree, which is only, well, it wouldn't be a kilometre from the beach where I go fishing. And I'm only 150 metres from the beach. So it's just so available. And I went out through the week. So I went out to catch bait to take to Broughton. And while I was catching the bait, I set a rod in the rod holder for any of the squire that I might pick up. Well, I picked up 6 squire without any trouble at all. And one or two probably not quite the kilo, but the best would probably be 1.5 kilos. So they're not big fish, but, oh, gee, they fit perfectly into the kitchen. So I've come home with and filleted or you can cook them whole. If you go to a restaurant, you'll get them whole. But I like to sort of serve them up without any bones in them, and you don't have to have play with bones. You can just get stuck straight into it with a bit of, you can crumb it if you wish. You can grill it if you like. You know, we have it with your rice, sweet and sour, whatever. I mean, it's just such a versatile fish, I reckon, a squire or a snapper. So I come home, and now, of course, I'm very popular again now. I wasn't very popular, but I'm popular now.
It's the big fish with John Stinker Clark, who lasted for 2 days when he said last week, I'm going to give up the bait. I'm going to the dark side. I'm just going to use soft plastics. And it didn't last for too long. But Stinker, here's a question for you. When does a squire turn into a snapper?
Yeah, that's a good question. And really, I don't think there's such a day that one day he's a squire and the next day he's a snapper. It's so I think, and it's, you know, some say, oh, it's when it gets a bump. Well, no, that's not the case. Because some snapper that are well over 5 kilo have no bump. So that's got that. Forget that one. That's got nothing. The bump's got nothing to do with it. It's just the size of the length of the fish or the weight of the fish. And I think that's around about maybe 1.5 kilos or 2 kilos. A 2 kilo fish is probably a small snapper or a large squire. And that's how, you know, I think a 3 kilo fish is a snapper. Other people might disagree, but it doesn't matter. When's a chopper tailor become a tailor? When is it, right. You know, when does a soapy Jew become a Jew or a mulloway? Yeah, it doesn't, you know, there's no date, there's no timeline. It's just the little ones are called this and the bigger ones are called that. That's about it.
It's funny, I was talking to Alex Bellissimo earlier on in the show about silver trevally, and I said, they're closely related to the yellowtail. I said, but what's the difference between a yellowtail and a cow and young? And I think a cow and young has a bigger eye, he reckoned.
I think they're a different fish.
I think they might be a different fish, but they look like a yellowtail, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They're a larger cousin.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So they're a different fish altogether.
And you got some good yellowtail. Did you get any slimies?
No, not one. Not one.
Oh, they're great bait, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But you can catch them over on the island, or at Cabbage Tree Island on the way to Broughton Island. But see, naming of fish has always been interesting to me because a small whiting is a whiting.
<That's>
a small flathead is a flathead. And a small brim, well, is a brim.
Yeah.
But, look, I don't lose any sleep over it.
No, that's right. There are bigger problems in the world. Hey, it's great to know you've come back to the bait. It's very funny how long it lasted. You made that declaration last week, and I thought this will be interesting. We'll see how long before he hooks on a piece of fresh yellowtail to catch a squire or a snapper. Hey, tight lines, mate. It's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I don't know what overcome me. It must have been the sun or something. All right, Scott. Hooroo, mate.
Hooroo, stinker.
This is The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Coming up, Treno on the Mid-North Coast with a deadly secret new bass lure that's a bit of a Frankenstein. It's a bit of a hybrid. It's a skirted jig. It's got weedless jig head with bristles. It's got a soft plastic tail, but it's absolutely braining the bass in the snags, and it's easy to let them go as well with a single hook. We'll catch up with Treno, who's going to share his secret, even though we'll have to put him on the rack to get it out of him. Up next on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish, and our man on the Mid-North Coast, Treno, Cole the Waymaster Trenneman, is going to share his secret lure with you. It's a weird Frankenstein type thing. It's like if someone sewed a chatterbait and soft plastic and a skirted jig together to form this wonderful thing with bristles and eyes and a funny soft flappy tail. It's got the lot, Treno, but it's been absolutely blasting the bass deep in the snags, and it's quite weedless. Good morning.
Morning, Scotty. How are you, mate?
Yeah, you were describing this to me on the phone, and I thought this is a bit of a Frankenstein of a thing. So it doesn't have the spinnerbait blades, but it's got a sort of a weedless, snag-free setup with the up-facing jig hook, and then you whack any old soft plastic on the tail.
Well, not anyone, but yeah, you can put a lot of plastic, soft plastics on the back, and they're sort of like I said, a chatterbait without the bling and blade. So, mate, they've got the weed guard there, which is a big thick, like a thicker than Basil Brush's beard, and it's got the ranges they go from say a quarter ounce or an eighth of an ounce right up to an ounce and a half, and they're just a skirt with a big hook in them.
Yeah, I've seen those weed guards that are like, they're like stiff bristles that arch up off the jig head or off the eye of the hook, and they don't go right down to the point of the other hook, but they tend to deflect most of the snags away from it. Is that right?
It helps with weed, but it can still get buried. Don't you worry. I've lost a couple in the last week or so, but yes, they are pretty good weedless, and they do roll through. Not the heavy, heavy timber, but, you know, your tweaky stuff. They'll move through that and across rocks and all that sort of stuff as well.
So there's it's like a skirted lure with a jig head, and then you whack a soft plastic on the back.
I do, mate. And what I usually use the power baits in a black crotchy or in about 2-inch. And about that, or any other colour. So, depending on what your jig head, that the colour of your skirt is, I should say, is what I use the colour, or very try and match it with the actual plus soft plastic.
And the bristly stuff doesn't get in the way of the hookups, because it sort of does a bit cover the hook point, doesn't it?
It does, mate. But you'll find that a lot of the fish will come, and I reckon they take it from behind. They'll come up and they'll grab it by the plastic and up around that, and they get their mouth over the top of it. And then when you got to really set the hook on it, and that's when the bristles fold enough to expose the hook to get them.
And what's the technique for fishing this weird concoction of a lure? You say it really works very well deep up in the snags, particularly when they're not motivated. I mean, when they're out and about and looking up, they'll take anything, you know. But when they're up in their hidey holes, it takes a bit of work to interest them, doesn't it?
That's right. Well, see, if I'm out in the thing there, out in the boat, and I'm looking at my sounder, and I look down, and I can tell bass from other fish, like just by the shape of them on my sounder. I haven't got a forward-facing sounder, a sonar or anything like that. I've just got a normal, good quality sounder, and I can tell what they are. Anyway, I look down and I see the pit, and if they're right hard on the bottom, well, that's when I pull out my jigs and me and that sort of stuff, and I start throwing them. And what you do is I pitch them out towards the bank, so you'll see a nice snag or an overhanging tree, and it's middle of the day. You want, and there's a good bite period on. So, and you think, well, why aren't they taking a frog, or why aren't they taking the cicada presentation? Why aren't they taking my CN60 I'm throwing around, or a little diver or something like that? And what happens is, I throw those in and let them sink, and I just work them out nice and slowly. So they look like a little crawdad or crawbob just sort of hopping around on the bottom, and I'll leave it sit for a while. I count to three or four and move it. Sometimes they'll hit it on the drop, and you'll just see your line move, and you just got to actually whack them and get them. Otherwise, it'll feel it. It's quite a sharp wrap on the line there. And what happens is that it's usually one or two wraps, and then you've got to really set the hook on them. Otherwise, if you just put weight on them, they will spit it and you won't hook them.
You've got to give it a bit of a whack. And having
give it a bit of a heave-o, yeah.
There's a lot of movement there, isn't it? You've got a skirt, a rubber skirt. You've got the tail as well. And spinner baits really need to be dropping or moving to create action. But that would sort of just wave it, like, I don't know, look like a crotchy or something going back down its burrow.
Well, at the moment, yeah, that's right. At the moment, being spring, you get a good crotchy hatch, usually up in the fresh, it works really well up in the top areas of the river, like up past the brackish water, back up in your freshwater, because you get a lot of crawfish in your rivers and dams and that'll spawn around this time, and there's a lot of new stuff coming out. And then not only that, you get a prawn hatch or a shrimp hatch as well. So you're trying to emulate what they are. So, with your prawn sitting hard on the bottom and that sort of thing rising out of the mud, or the crotchy just coming out of his hole, having it, what might be up underneath the timber there. And old Mr. Bass, he's not looking up, he's looking down. So that's what you do. You put something down so he can see it.
Yeah. That's the way to get them, although off the surface is your preferred method. Tell us about your weedless frogs, because they're your go-to, aren't they? You'd much rather fish that than a jig on the bottom.
Oh, definitely, mate. And you can cover more ground with it with the weedless. Now, I call it, I try and get every Wednesday, and I call it a weedless Wednesday. Your mate's thinking I'm not smoking marijuana.
It's the big fish with Cole, the Waymaster Trenneman. But those things, they're amazing, aren't they, with the hooks hidden right up into the soft body. They really are a terrific lure.
They are. When they're on the surface, mate, they are absolutely the takes on those are amazing. I've had fish up to around as low as 20 centimetres swallow a 4-inch frog. So, when they want to eat it, they'll eat it. And other times when they bugger eyes around, they're just buffed behind it. I've always said, though, if with the surface too, mate, you got to have clarity in the water. If it's really dirty, it's a really tough bite. So there'll be a lot of misses, if you know what I mean. They'll come up and they go bang, 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 and they miss it. If the water's a bit clear and they're on the chew, they inhale it.
Yeah. Now, did you take umbrage at Peachy, the fly fishing guru, last week, saying that he's in Bass Sydney too, and there's some really good lure fishers in there, saying that in his opinion, the fly is more effective than the lure? I'll have to jump on the McClay with you and give it a go. Well, one of the things he was talking about is the fact that if you do have a surface lure or a subsurface lure, you've got to bring it back to the boat and throw it in there again. Whereas with the fly, they buff it, or they're there, you pick it up, you put it in the same spot in the blink of an eye, and you can present more quickly to more fish. That was one point he was making. I still think that a really good lure fisherman will probably outdo the fly fisherman, but who's having the most fun? That's the question, Trenno.
I think both of you are having fun, mate. Now, I've told you I've never been a magician, mate, so I don't know about waving a magic wand. But I do know that surface is one of me, on bass is one of my passions, mate. I've always done it. The beautiful thing about with the frogs, the weedless frogs I'm using, I cover more ground quickly and I still get a few fish. With your fly, it's a bit like if you were throwing a fly, I'd be throwing one of my skirted jigs. I'd be throwing that down because you're only moving slowly, or you stopped at one snag and that's what you're peppering.
Yeah, I think it's horses for courses, but both methods are really effective, and it's all about sport because no one kills a bass. So it's very much about, you know, minimal damage to the fish, letting them go, you know, making sure that their habitat's in good nick. And Bass Sydney and Ausfish do that. So, you know, if the fishermen weren't there, I don't think we'd have the fish because they're the people like you. You love them, don't you? They're like your children.
No, that's right. Well, I don't know. I don't treat my children the same. I'm only joking.
You're not that kind. It's great fun. But that jig sounds like an absolute cracker. What other fish would that? I mean, there's surely that lure brim out of the deep snags as well.
I don't know. I've yet to try it. They come standard with pretty big hooks in them, so which makes it a bit, would you say, probably not up the brim's alley. But I dare say they'd work. I do something similar with a jig head and a plastic for them. Yeah.
But those jig heads with the bristles on them, terrific idea. I mean, just running that without the skirt and a soft plastic tail threaded on the back, that'd be handy around the weed beds for flathead as well.
Yeah, well, even just like you said, just with the skirt, I know a lot of blokes don't put a trailer on. See, sometimes, depending on how fussy they want to be, sometimes you don't use the trailer, you just use the skirt, and as it just moves around, I just throw the trailer on just as a filler.
Yeah, right.
Just to throw it in there to give it up, because what happens is the jig head sits, the hook sits up.
Mm.
And so with that, you can put when you put the plastic on, what it does, it lifts that plastic up and it makes it look like it's defending itself.
So this is a trenovation.
No.
This is your innovation to put the, because they come standard with the soft plastic skirt or the plastic skirt, don't they? The rubber skirt and then the weedless bristle bit that comes off the jig head, but you're adding the soft plastic tail.
I think so, mate. Yeah, look, I think Starlo and all those boys might have invented that well before me. I did look at it and say, well, that'll look nice on that.
Yeah, fair enough.
This goes without it, Suzanne. You know what it is?
Nothing's new. Nothing's new in fishing, but the best fishermen's the one having the most fun. And the bass are starting to come back. They're not on the surface yet. It's been very quiet. Cicadas so far. We need those cicadas to start drumming in the trees. That really gets us fired up, doesn't it? And the fish.
It does, mate. But see, last year we had that 1 in 7 year event last year. So if we do get a cicada hatch, we're going to have a few storms and a little bit of rain. We've had this last week, we've had, I think, probably 35 mil. So it's probably just enough, or we might need a little bit more. What it does is it loosens the soil up, and if there's any cicadas left after the flooding, they'll come out.
They can burrow their way out. Yeah, well, I noted the Pottsville, I think it was, at 132 mils last week in those storms. So that'll certainly make the ground soft enough. Oh, Trenno, it's great fun as we get into the summer season. Just quickly for our mid-North Coast fishers and North Coast fishers from Taree to the border, because it's your backyard, what's on the go?
Mate, look, if you can get offshore, there's some really nice snapper get around. The water's still warm, believe it or not. It's around that 20 degrees. 20, 21 degrees, which is really weird for this time of year. It's normally plummeted down to 18, 17, even 16 degrees, and you get nothing but pick handles. But that may still yet to come in November. November, December is our coldest water. But, mate, few reds out wide. There was a good run of striped marlin. I believe there's still a few around, and they were getting plenty of them. The current was running. It was about 23, 24 out there, and they were getting some good stripes, up to 100 or better, 100 kilo or better. In the river, mate, look, flathead, the big flathead, as everybody has heard about in Foss, have just gone off. And there's some big girls out there. And I've actually, one day when we got a bit of a time and off air, I'll have a yak to you about that. I found some very interesting facts out about flathead.
Oh, nice. Oh, we might do a little deep dive into that next time we have a chat. But in our estuaries, closer to the middle of the state, or I guess you're the mid-North Coast, around the central coast where I live, the flathead are in plague proportions, lots and lots and lots of small fish, which has got to say something about letting the breeders go. The regulations have been in for a couple of years now. It might be starting to pay dividends.
Definitely, mate, definitely. And I think we've had, like I said, four to five years of flooding. So, you know, everybody can't believe how many dew around or mulloway around. They can't believe this. And I said, well, mate, we've had 4 to 5 years of flooding, which is recruitment gone out the window, gone mad. So, we've actually, we've had good years for it, so hopefully we can reap the reward for the next 3 or 4 to 5 years.
Treno, tight lines, mate. See you on the river.
Hooray, mate.
Thanks for joining us again on The Big Fish.